armored companies of the Imperial Guard. Despise infantry if you must. Crush them under your tracks, by all means. But do not ignore them. Battlefields are littered with the wreckage of tanks whose crews ignored infantry. Anon. Heretics crave the cleansing fire of absolution. They need not fear, for we shall deliver. Captain Kurt, Hellhound Commander. An Imperial Guard armored company consists almost entirely of armored vehicles, with the only infantry included being those mounted in chimeras to keep up with the rapid advance of the tanks. A typical armored company consists of anything between 12 and 24 tanks, and is primarily used to batter through enemy strong points, exploit a breakthrough, or act as a mobile reserve to counterattack advancing enemy. An armored company will often be used to spearhead attacks and break through enemy lines. Special missions or objectives of a particularly critical nature are often entrusted to armored companies, though they are unsuitable for holding ground or raiding into enemy territory. Armored companies are specialized formations, and how they are raised and integrated into an Imperial Guard army is quite different to a regular Imperial Guard regiment. The Imperial Guard is a massive organization, drawn from a million different worlds and brought together by the Departamento Munitorum through a rigorously enforced, but incredibly arcane, system of tithes. Most of the regiments raised for service in the Imperial Guard are infantry, which is not surprising, as the one resource the Imperium has in abundance is manpower. However, while the Imperial Guard is rightly regarded as a ponderous organization which specializes in delivering bludgeoning hammer blows to an enemy, rather than the decisive rapier thrusts of the Adeptus Astartes, it still needs a way of breaking through defensive lines and taking the battle to the enemy. Armored regiments are the assault arm of the Imperial Guard, raised on industrialized worlds and equipped with unsophisticated but rugged vehicles. They have been the weapon of choice for Imperial Guard generals for as long as the Imperium has stood. An armored regiment consists of several companies. Normally, there will be at least three, but some regiments boast over a dozen. Because of the sheer power of the tanks in action, armored regiments normally split into their constituent companies in battle. A company of tanks can be allocated to an infantry regiment to provide close support, or conversely, operate on its own, supported in some cases by troops detached from infantry regiments in the same army. It is rare for tanks and infantry to be officially part of the same regiment, but once intermixed to fight, it is common for secondments to become permanent, at least for the duration of a war or crusade. But in all practical cases, the armored company is the level of tank formation most commonly encountered, whether admixed with other elements or not. An armored company will always have a commander, operating either alone in his own tank or supported by a HQ squadron of one or two more tanks. The Lehman Russ Vanquisher is a popular choice as a command tank, as its long-barreled battle cannon is especially effective in the hands of a veteran crew. The company will consist of 3 to 6 squadrons of tanks, each squadron having a command tank, and 1 to 2 other tanks. These will most commonly be Lehman Russ tanks, although demolishers, hellhounds, and chimeras can also be pressed into service. Whilst the formal organization of armored companies contains only tanks, some cross-attaching of units is common. This is not based on any standard practice formalized in Imperial Guard manuals, but is instead either improvised by experienced commanders or undertaken as a necessity of battle. The most common attachments are infantry from Steel Legion-style formations. The Steel Legion are specifically an Armageddon unit, but the term is used more widely to describe infantry units entirely mounted in Chimera transports. Or, as any sensible person would say, they are mechanized infantry. The Chimera being the universally recognized and utilized APC of the Imperial Guard, or the Astra Militarum, as it seems to be called now. The Chimera enables the Infantry not only to keep up with the tanks, but to add significantly to an armoured company's firepower. The infantry are invaluable in dense terrain where the risk of assault by enemy infantry is at its highest. Despite their power, tanks are vulnerable to attack by determined infantry. Eldar haywire grenades and Orc super stick bombs are both capable of defeating the most powerful armour, and threat alone will drastically slow armoured operations if there are no infantry supporting them. When it comes to reconnaissance, Imperial tanks are too large and noisy to perform the job well. To fill this niche, armoured companies are commonly assigned squadrons of Sentinel Walkers. The Sentinel is the workhorse of virtually every Imperial Guard formation. And it is the exception to the rule that all armoured companies include only tanks. Armoured company commanders are always enthusiastic to secure Sentinel support, and when they get it, will do anything to avoid letting it go. The Sentinel has such an excellent all-round capability that a tank formation acting independently is hamstrung without them. They excel at sniffing out enemy and, having located them, are sufficiently well-armed to support the tanks in the ensuing battle. Broadly speaking, they are used in two roles: pure reconnaissance, as described above, and as tank hunters. While the armoured company's tanks roar forward, Sentinels can occupy concealing terrain and fire accurately with their las cannons in support. Their flimsy armour is less of a disadvantage when the enemy's attention is fixed on the near-invulnerable Leman Russ. The other advantage of Sentinels is that they can go virtually anywhere an infantryman can go and still take their heavy firepower with them. They can find routes through difficult terrain for the tanks to follow and give a commander a means of finishing off an enemy when the tank's firepower drives them deep into a wood or town. Finally, it is possible that artillery units will be assigned to an armoured company. This is actually very rare, as artillery is at its best when set up a good distance from the enemy lines and is able to remain static and bombard continually. This method of fighting is diametrically opposed to the bludgeoning tactics of the armoured companies. Sometimes the artillery is transferred to act as improvised tanks to swell numbers. At other times, they are there because formations merge in the heat of battle without any real tactical reason. In either case, griffins and basilisks are not entirely at home in armoured companies and will often find themselves doing jobs they would not normally be expected to do. In the Scourging of Yinthel in M38889, griffins with dozer blades were used by the Narminian armoured companies to clear enemy earthworks, while the tanks provided covering fire. And during the fighting against Wah Drojok in M40472, basilisks with armoured crew compartments served alongside the Antrok Lancers as battle tanks while storming the Vannon River fords. On other occasions, the artillery have served to spread incoming fire more thinly and reduce the chances of the fighting tanks being damaged. An armoured company's support vehicles, ammo carriers, fuel trucks and the like, will normally be provided for a campaign by the Departmento Munitorum. Each squadron can contain a mix of vehicles, but the newer the regiment, the more likely they are to be the same. These lightly armed but very valuable vehicles will never be risked in combat if possible. Their crews are not combat hardened and are made up of men who can only be trusted to labour rather than fight. When units are assigned to support the armoured company from other formations, such as infantry or artillery, they are assigned to either a company commander or a squadron commander. This keeps the internal organisation of the armoured company constant and avoids confusing battlefield command with additional subunits. It is acknowledged that tank commanders do not always know what is best for their support units, so a degree of autonomy is acceptable. The sergeants of armoured fist units, for example, quickly learn what is needed of them and do not wait for an order to intercept enemy infantry. Armoured companies of the Imperial Guard are renowned for the speed and ferocity of their assaults, smashing through enemy positions with the thunder of their armoured vehicles. Their deployment is not undertaken lightly, for it is a logical nightmare to coordinate so many vehicles together with their associated materiel. Ammunition, fuel, food, water, and all manner of sundries are consumed at a frightening rate by an armored company. Whole convoys of fuel trucks follow in the wake of the company too, which in turn need to be guarded and fueled themselves, generating even longer supply chains. When the full might of an armored company is unleashed, there is little that can stand against it. Dozens of tanks roar forward, their tracks churning the ground, and cannons firing with the sound of thunder. The very earth trembles as these iron leviathans attack, and only the most determined or foolish enemy will dare stand against them. In the wake of the blitz of an armored company's attack, come the infantry companies. But there is usually very little for them to do but mop up scattered remnants of broken, terrorized enemy soldiers. The terror of an entire company of tanks crashing through a position should not be underestimated, and many foes have had to rue the day they overestimated their ability to hold off the armored companies of the Imperial Guard. Ironically, despite being capable of such awesome destruction, armored companies are unsuited for holding the ground they capture, relying on infantry to consolidate their gains. While armored companies are an extremely powerful shock force in battle, they rely, however much their commanders might disagree, on supporting units of artillery and infantry to operate at their most effective. As well as spearheading assaults, armored companies are also particularly effective as mobile reserves, breaking up enemy offensives that have burst through friendly forces. Enemy troops and armored fighting vehicles that have battled through the first line of defense are typically disorganized and scattered, easy prey for a concerted counterattack. An armored company's speed allows it to react rapidly to the changing fortunes of the battlefield, and often the sudden arrival of squadrons of heavy armor has turned retreat into attack. Such dramatic operations produce a different breed of guard officer, one more used to flamboyant displays of heroism than the drudgery of common foot sloggers. Used to the protection of several tons of steel and armor plus, many officers are prone to wilder excesses of courage than those who know that only a few thin layers of ablative material stand between them and death. Armored companies do not see action as much as infantry units. Infantry can be used in virtually any terrain, can be used to police rebellious populations, perform more menial digging and entrenching, and provide garrisons on backwater worlds. Whilst an armored company can be used in this way, the crews shouldering their las guns and acting as improvised infantry, it is far from ideal. Their real role and best use is in major campaigns where their ability to deliver battle-winning attacks is legendary. Because the Imperial Guard as a whole is operationally quite slow, it is sometimes advantageous for their advance to be spearheaded by armored companies. In this role, they advance ahead of the main army, in tight formations, often supported by sentinel squadrons seconded from reconnaissance units. These formations will advance at maximum speed, cutting holes in the enemy formations before pressing on without pause to isolate pockets of resistance, which can then be mopped up by the more conventional Imperial Guard units advancing behind them. Massed armor is almost impossible to stop without the enemy committing their own mobile forces, thereby allowing the Imperial Guard to seize the initiative and force the enemy to fight a battle of attrition. This approach is most effective when the line of attack is aimed at weak points in the enemy line. Overall, the objective is not to destroy the enemy by direct action, but to fragment them and get the armored companies amongst second-line formations, disrupting supplies and overrunning depots. The key to success is how well the tanks are supported. Lack of fuel and ammunition will often halt their advance long before the enemy are able to do so, and counterattacks launched against the sides of the line of march will drain the armored company's strength and may cut them off entirely. Often, the Imperial Guard will be fighting on battlefronts stretching hundreds of miles. The lethality of the 41st millennium's weaponry makes constant attack very expensive in lives, and even the Imperial Guard cannot simply throw men away attacking strongly held positions indefinitely. The tank charge will be supported by a general advance of all army elements. Light artillery, such as man-portable mortars, can continue to fire as the armored company moves forward as, even if they are not on target, their shells cannot harm the tanks. With the main defensive line overthrown, the armored companies will often revert to individual spearheads before moving on to secondary objectives. The Tank Squadron. Within the Imperial Guard, the most common lower-level formation is the squadron. This consists of three tanks, one of which is a command tank. Virtually every combination of armored vehicle has at some time operated as a squadron, either by plan or necessity, although the classic squadron consists of three Lehman Russ battle tanks. Line abreast. This formation involves the squadron's command tank setting the line of march while the other two tanks accompany it to either side. All the guns can fire forward and the flanks of the command tank are covered. The weaknesses are that changes in direction from the command tank leave little time for the other tanks to adjust, and the formation is very weak if engaged in the flank, where only one tank can bring its weapons to bear. Spearhead. Intended for a general advance, this formation is superior to a standard line abreast, as the command tank's flanks are still partially covered. However, now its sponson guns have a much wider firing arc. Two tanks can direct their fire to either flank, ensuring the formation is stronger against flank attacks. Any enemy assaulting the squadron leader's tank can expect to be engaged by the sponson weapons of the supporting tanks following up behind. Echelon. Particularly useful when moving around an enemy strongpoint, the echelon allows all weapons to be brought to bear in either direction. A simple turn left or right forms a new echelon advancing in a new direction. The flanks of the lead two tanks are partially protected, but only from one side, and the rear tank can be left vulnerable to an attack from the rear. Each tank can offer supporting fire against any assaults to the tank in front. Column. Column is primarily used for moving along roads or between areas of difficult terrain. It leaves the tanks very vulnerable to flanking fire and limits the firepower quite dramatically. Generally, this formation is only used when it is the only formation that fits the circumstances, being especially useful for protecting command tanks from heavy fire. When moving up on an enemy position, it ensures that only the lead tank can be engaged, guaranteeing that supporting tanks can move out and engage when space allows. Notable engagements. Radnar. Following the battles on Ikker 4, Imperial forces were redeployed to contest the hive world of Radnar. The area around Jormul Hive was filled with Tyranid nests, and the ability of the Tyranids to emerge anywhere in the vicinity made the region very difficult to attack. The Imperial lines surrounded the Hive, a total distance of 340 miles, and a six-week bombardment was commenced. Tyranid spore mines inflicted heavy losses on the besiegers, but ultimately it was the news that swarms were moving towards Jormul from the other infested hives that prompted action. The Emperor's Shield Regiment, numbering 9 full-strength companies, was massed to break into the leveled hive city. They included large numbers of tanks equipped with flamers, both Hellhounds and Lehman Russ demolishers, and as they reached the outer lines of nests, they used these to cleanse each in turn. Faced with a choice of frying in their holes or emerging, the Tyranids swarmed to the surface. The tanks advanced in close formation, leaving the smaller gaunts nowhere to go. Their tracks were stained with the beast's foul ichor, as whole broods were crushed beneath them. Ahead of the tank line, a sea of flame rolled forward, consuming even more Tyranids before they could get to them. Every time a Carnifex or Tyranid warrior brood emerged, it was transfixed in a lattice of las cannon fire or pummeled by numerous battle cannon shells. The implacable advance of the Emperor's Shield Regiment shattered the control of the hive mind, preventing any form of coherent response, and without any significant pause, continued to the far side of the hive site, where the remnants of the swarm were herded to destruction against the lines of circumvallation. Circumvallation. Colonel Tamas Sirhan. One of the greatest heroes of the 3rd Armored Company of the 124th Cadian Regiment was Colonel Tamas Sirhan, commander of the Leman Russ battle tank, Anvilus Imperator. Famed for always riding into battle with his hatch open and brandishing his family power saber, he disdained those who cowered in their vehicles when there was the glory of dying enemies to behold. Ever eager to lead the charge of his vehicles, his company expended more fuel and munitions in the 6 months Draxian campaign than the entire 235th Lochran Regiment recorded in their 3-year campaign to liberate the Lodwyn Belt. Colonel Sirhan remains the only warrior in the 124th Cadian to have won the Order of Macarius, following his actions at the Battle of Vrodkin Ford, where he and his company fought and destroyed a Chaos Battle Titan. The Titan protected the one place where armored vehicles could cross the River Aster, and which led to the enemy rear echelons. Imperial forces had taken a fearsome pounding trying to cross the river with pontoon bridges, and every attempt had met with failure. The commanders of the force were unaware of this location until Sirhan's tanks captured the forward elements of the enemy's recon company probing from the north and were able to extract information on how they could approach the Imperial positions unseen. Sirhan immediately mounted up his tanks, commandeering fuel and shells earmarked for the second company, and roared off to the north in search of the crossing. Dawn was breaking as his scout vehicles reported the presence of the ford, though they attracted heavy fire as they attempted to cross. Determined to exploit the ford, no matter the cost, Sirhan led his vehicles from their leaguer and drove his tank straight into the water. As the tanks reached the center of the river, a thunderous tremor shook the ground and the towering shape of a titan emerged from behind the sides of the river valley. 3 Leman Russ were blown apart in as many seconds by the titan's guns before the rest were able to scatter and return fire. The behemoth's void shields flickered as shell after shell impacted, but none could penetrate its thick armor, and another swathe of tanks exploded under its withering firepower. Colonel Sirhan charged forward, his tank belching smoke as it emerged from the river. Supporting infantry waited in the shadow of the Titan, but as more and more tanks emerged from the river, the weight of their suppressive fire began to take its toll. The shells of the few tanks that had survived to close with the Titan were now close enough to bypass their foes' shields, and armored plates cracked and ran molten beneath their repeated barrage. Realizing that it had underestimated its foe, the Titan began backing off. Colonel Sirhan was not to be denied. He drove right up to the Titan and unloaded his remaining ordnance into its weakening leg joint. His last shell detonated against the giant war machine's joint, and in a shower of flame and exploding metal, the Titan collapsed on top of the Colonel's command tank, crushing him and his crew to death. The last battered survivors of the company were able to vox regimental HQ and tell them what had happened. Within 4 hours, flanking elements of the 124th had crossed the Aster and were able to catch their enemy completely by surprise, rampaging through their baggage and supply camps. Every one of the dead tank crews received the medallion in carmine, and Colonel Sirhan was awarded the Order of Macarius, despite some officers' belief that he should be posthumously court-martialed. While an extreme example, Colonel Sirhan is fairly typical of the mindset of commanders of armored companies, daring, dramatic, and dynamic, always leading from the front and contemptuous of cowards. The men and women who make up the soldiers of an armored company see themselves as the elite companies of the Imperial Guard and are often dismissive of the lowly infantrymen, all too often forgetting that all the different arms of the Imperial Guard must work together to achieve victory. Colonel Mitrofan Tesla. At the Battle of Vastalor Salient, armored companies from the Juran Dragoons counterattacked the forces of the Orc warlord Grashtak the Arch-Murderer. Nice name. As they broke through the trenches of their infantry companies. So successful was the counterattack that the commander of the company, Colonel Mitrofan Tesla, pursued the Orcs through the no man's land, separating the two armies back to their own positions. In the mad haste of pursuit, Tesla allowed his tanks to become scattered, and when the Orcs rallied and counterattacked his force, many were picked off by bands of Orc tank hunters. It was a testament to Tesla's skill that he was able to regain a measure of command and control over his company and fight his way back to the following infantry companies. Together with the supporting infantry, the Jaroons were able to smash through the Orc lines and destroy hundreds of Orc warbands, breaking open the salient and paving the way for the victory in the campaign against the Orcs. And with that, dear viewer, I will say goodbye. Thank you for watching, everybody. Thank you to everybody supporting the channel. Cannot say how much I appreciate that. And you can see your name scrolling by here. If you'd like to support the channel, please consider using the links below. Please do give the video a like. Let me know in the comments what you think. I love Imperial Guard stuff. It's always so amazing. It's always so cool. I've done a lot of Imperial Guard videos, so if this is the first one you've seen, do go and check them out. You'll enjoy them. I will be back very, very soon with more stuff. Like I've said before, the next couple of weeks, I'm just going to be doing smaller videos as I get back into the sort of making content and everything. Do check out the videos I've done if you've missed them. I've made a couple now over the last couple of weeks. But we'll be doing some story time and some bigger videos very, very soon as we head into Christmas 2024. And I'll be carrying on into the new year as well. Thanks very much. Like I say, shorter videos just for a little bit, just so I can get back into the rhythm of everything. And then we'll be back to some bigger things. Thank you all for watching. I'll see you again soon. May the Emperor protect. Ta-ra.